Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 5, Fur and Loathing. Original air date is October 30th, 2003. Director Richard J. Lewis, writers Anthony E. Zeiker and Jerry Stahl. And we don't start off with shots of the Vegas Strip.
No.
We're on like a mountainy road, but before we continue down that mountainy road, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Yeah, we do get a few scenes eventually early on, and then just a couple more throughout, and we end up at 22.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, other than the fact that this episode is very convention heavy, which I do associate with Vegas because I have flown out to Vegas for conventions. So like those two things are like linked for me intrinsically. This isn't really a very Vegas heavy episode beyond that.
Yeah. It's like in like a hotel more than like a convention center, like when they're showing it off. So
to be fair, the convention I went to was in a hotel that had a convention center-y part to it. So
like the biggest room they're ever in is like elementary school auditorium sized. You know what I mean? They don't have like that convention room floor feeling. They have one big sort of hall. But I on the little people, I don't remember exactly what they call that convention. I think it felt more convention-y.
Yeah, I don't remember what they called that convention either. Yeah.
Vegas is definitely a big convention destination. So this is, I think, the second one that we've had of the convention theme. And
spoiler alert,
it will not be the last.
Spoiler alert, it's not the last one.
We're just going to work our way through weird things that the writers of Las Vegas or things that the writers of Las Vegas are weird and think they should have conventions for.
So we're on this mountain road. We go to a woman driving. She hits something / someone, which then causes her to swerve right into a truck, just straight on into a truck.
I actually really think they did a great job with this scene. This is one of the few things on the rewatch where you can tell that she's like looking off to the side of the road before she hits something.
Yes.
In the rearview mirror, you can really, the thing that she hits, you can actually really see it. Mm-hmm. You can't make a lot of sense out of it at this time.
No.
But it's really, they really do a good job of capturing it all there. And also, like, there's a big thing later about like how long she was braking for. And then they show it. It's like, yeah, they really kind of did show her. She was on the wrong side of the road for a long time.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
And they not to, to get ahead of myself, but there's a number of times in the rewatch for the first time, I think, in many, many episodes, I was like, oh, they did a good job of that.
Yeah. So we then have Grissom and Catherine there on scene. The truck driver is adamant that he is not drunk. He didn't do anything wrong. This woman just like swerved right in front of him. What was he supposed to do?
Maybe a little misogynistic or old-fashioned, depending on how kind we want to be to him. Yeah. He refers to her as a broad.
Yeah, he does refer to her as a broad.
It's like, is this a 1937's noir episode again?
Evidently. So they go over to said broad in her car. She is deceased, and they're starting to walk the road. They're kind of following the skid marks where she obviously was like braking, and then they find big paw prints, which they follow, and it brings them off the side of the road to, at first looks like a bit of fur. It's kind of difficult to tell, but as they get closer, we realize that it is a person in a fursuit.
Yeah, it was actually really confusing. Like when you're seeing it, not knowing what it was, it just looks, I was like, is that a deer? Or like,
you're like, what is happening here?
Because I think they make you think the feet or the head or something.
Yeah.
Normally they would like start the head and pan down. I don't know.
Yep.
And they were kind of doing reverse. It was good. It was clever.
Yeah. And we go to credits and I enjoyed this. There was no quip to credits because Grissom was speechless. They just focus on Grissom being like, what? But not saying what, just his face saying what, and then
they
saved it for the end. So we then we're back, same scene. Catherine is removing the mask. Grissom's like noticing that this costume is very detailed. This is not like, not that really like
Halloween costume.
Yeah, this was not like a Temu $10 like fur costume, right? Like this was like a well made costume. Catherine tells a fun little story about how she dated a mascot. So she gets it. Like she gets how intricate these costumes can be.
Butch, Dutch, something like that.
Butch, yeah, something like that. And then
Detroit Lions mascot. That's the only thing I know.
Catherine pulls a quote-unquote furball from the mask, from the mouth of the mask. And then David comes over, and he's very disturbed by this scene, because when he was growing up, there was a cartoon raccoon called Stripey that he and his like fellow kids loved, and this man in a raccoon suit is reminding him of Stripey, and it's like, it's a little bit traumatic for David.
I thought that was going to come back up again. It never does.
No. I just wanted to mention it because I just thought it was like a funny, weird little like.
They spend offshoot. A good time.
They spend a good amount of time on this. So then we pop into storyline B. Nick and Sarah are with a body in a freezer. We then realize and go out to Vega is talking to the security guard, and he's claiming that a robber like cleaned out all the vending machines. Nick again is like really good with like getting people to talk and agree to things that he wants them to say. Nick gets him to admit that he might have left his post to go to In-N-Out and was at In-N-Out a little bit longer than he originally said that he was. But he does finally also tell them that around 11 o'clock, George, who works the day shift, pulls up and was looking for Al, who is the victim. But George, not there currently, but his car is out in the parking lot. So that's strange. So we then we're back with David. He's leading Grissom and Catherine into like the morgue. We learn that the woman in the car is Linda Jones. And they then go over to the person in the raccoon suit, and they realize that he is a recovering alcoholic because he has a 30-day token on him. Then David's like cutting the suit off of the victim here, and blood just like erupts from it.
Yeah, a significant amount of blood. A significant amount of blood dumps all over the table.
And Grissom realizes that the suit has a bullet hole in it. And so the victim not only was clipped by a car, but also was shot. Yes. So bad day. Bad day for the raccoon.
Is it now or later they lament that the suit is made of like latex?
Right now they talk about how the inside of it is latex.
Don't know why, but that would be impermeable, so all the blood would just pool up. It didn't drain out into the road or something. Although it was shot through and through, so there was technically a hole on both sides.
Yeah, still was technically a hole, yeah. But then I guess it was like how he was positioned.
Yeah, yeah.
That the body, the blood pooled elsewhere.
There's still plenty of pooling room inside of a suit.
Yeah, this is true. Doc Robbins is then in the freezer with our victim from storyline B, and he gives instructions on how to like put boiling water around the perimeter of the victim so they can lift the victim up without losing limbs.
He had to have his out of the lab moment.
He did. He's on a roll here. He's on a streak with his out of the lab moments. I'm proud of Doc Robbins. We then have a few scenes with Nick going around the crime scene. He spots blood pellets. He picks up like this piece of like plastic. Like, he's just collecting different things from the scene, which we will follow up on. We then have Catherine approaching Warwick, who's in the lab. We learn that the man in the raccoon suit is Robert/Bob Pitt, and he was ordered to AA after having, I believe, like a DUI or something happened that he was court ordered to go to AA. And we learn that the fur ball, the blue fur in his mouth, is also synthetic, which of course it's blue. Like there's no natural blue fur as far as I'm aware. So I was like, yeah, of course it's synthetic, but that's fine. Greg Sanders enters with the results, the tox results from the victim. No alcohol. So he was, in fact, still on the wagon, but he did have Ipecac and Civic oil. So one thing that would make you vomit. And then one thing that theoretically can be used as an aphrodisiac.
We had a bottle of Ipecac syrup in like my medicine cabinet growing up, which I'm sure was there from when we were babies.
Yeah. I mean, I think Catherine mentioned having to use it on Lindsay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why we still had it when we were all adults, like not adults, but like, you know, old enough to know not to drink the bleach, but it was still always around. It was like, I often wonder if my parents didn't get it after they had to bring someone to the hospital, and the doctor's like, you should really have.
Yeah, you should really have. Because
it was that,
and
it was a bottle of activated charcoal.
Oh, yeah.
Which is you give them to throw up, and then you give them that to absorb anything that resides.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was like, oh, what story has my dad not told me? Nick, you once drank bleach.
You made so it. Yeah. You survived. So.
Well, I mean, who knows? Who knows? I could have been a genius. Yeah.
I mean, that's true. We'll never know.
Or just been able to digest onions.
That's true. And peppers. Yeah.
Yeah.
We then have Jim Brass and Catherine there at Pitts's home. Catherine finds a nice little collection of raccoon plushies in his theoretically bedroom, but then I was wondering where does he sleep? Yeah. Because the entire bed is covered with raccoon.
I assume plushies. On top of the pile.
I guess on top of the pile. Yeah. Could have, I mean, who am I to judge? But on a calendar that he has hanging up in the room is PAFCON. And PAFCON is still going on. So they're like, maybe we need to go check out PAFCON. So Grissom and Catherine go do that. We learn that it is the plushie and furries convention. Grissom, fascinated. And not in like, in a truly, I'm a scientist. And this is like legitimately very interesting.
I don't say like built bewildering, but like that novel exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, wow, this is like amazing. And I just want to like be in this and learn about it. Catherine, not so much. Catherine, a little skeeved out by this.
Yeah.
By this entire.
There's a lot of weird language used throughout this episode. It also flip flops a little bit, where like sometimes like Grissom says something weird, and then Catherine's kind of being like the more corrective one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's obvious they had a lot of trouble navigating the script on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. We then have a Nick, Sarah, and Richie walk and talk. We learn that the piece of plastic or the piece of material that Nick collected at the scene is part of a shotgun stock. And the rest of the information needs to come from Hodges, though. And from Hodges, we learn that the like material, the not material, but the it's adhesive.
Yeah, there's epoxy resin. Yes. That yes. was probably, it was probably a prior repair.
Yes, it was like a cheap repair to this gun, most likely. We then have...
By the way, mind-blowing that you have this little sliver of wood and you know it comes from like a specific shotgun. Like I could get like this type of wood or this kind of thing. And maybe that's totally doable, but I was kind of like, wait, they can do...
You're like, what?
Can they really do that?
Like, is that possible?
I was like, maybe... I thought they were going to be like, oh, yeah, it was stamped with serial number, you know.
Yeah.
You know, some kind of like...
Yeah, that's fair.
Extra step. But they were just like, no, just no, like...
We it just blends, know.
It goes to like this very specific shotgun. I was like,
yep.
Okay.
We then have a tall, disheveled man walking into police headquarters, and he wants to report a crime, which brings us immediately to Vega, Sarah, and Nick with said man, who we learn is George, the missing day shift person.
Give me real Of Mice and Men vibes.
Yes, for sure. And we learn from him that he was trying to get Al in on the action on like selling this expired ice cream, and that's why he like had stopped, you know, by the place that night. But instead they encountered the robbers, and then he's like bopped over the head, and then he's put in the trunk, and then he uses a tire iron to escape, and he's like in a town creature. He's in a town that he has family, but he's like,
that's
a little weird.
That was one of that is also an important note, yeah. Which I did not see coming. And on the rewatch, I was like, oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah, how clever. I was like, oh yeah, I have family in town, but I went to see them, but they weren't home.
Yeah. I went to go see them, but they weren't home. And so Sarah starts processing George a little bit, like his clothing. She pulls some like blue flecks off of his shirt, and then she notices that he has blood on his pants. So she's like, hey, George, you and the pants gonna have to hang out here for a bit. We then have a scene with Grissom at a lecture. He's like really, really diving into this. So he's like attending. He's going to the lectures.
I really want to know. I think this entire lecture is made up for the show.
I think so.
I think weird, so.
Yeah, I like, think it is.
I would really want to know, because it would have been cool if they like actually found somebody who's associated with that lifestyle and put in like a
piece of
an actual lecture.
Okay, so fun fact, did you see the description of this episode on Paramount Plus? Like what it said?
No.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me see if I can pull it up. Okay, so here's the description on Paramount Plus of Fur and Loathing, because this is perfect. I wanted to bring this up and this is perfect. Anthony E. Zeiker says, quote, my middle son, Evan Jerome Zeiker, identifies with being a furry. Today, they still identify with this culture, which was rooted out of this episode. Who knew Ness or Litho is the CSI creator's son. At this point in our seasonal run, we were looking to do episodes about interesting and provocative worlds. Back then, and then it cuts off. It keeps going. But his Anthony Zeiker's son is a furry. And that's like what spurred this episode on.
Oh. Is he in the episode?
Yes.
Is that what they were saying? He's one of the characters?
He's one of the characters.
That's cool.
Fun fact.
I feel like maybe they didn't consult him as much as they should have. Some of the time.
I definitely agree with that. So we... Oh, yeah. So then we have Catherine approaching two men at this convention. She's like asking if they recognize Pitt. They do not want to talk to her. She tries to pet one of their plush dogs. He's not for it, which, fair. Like, ask for consent before you touch people's stuff.
Yeah, that was actually in, like, one of the times I was like, did they must have talked to somebody if they put that in there. Or maybe the extra was, like, a person and it could have even happened organically or happened offset. And the director's like, let's put that in the...
Yeah.
In the thing.
Yeah. Grissom then finds and purchases a picture of raccoon and lamb. Because now he's realizing, why am I showing people pictures of the victim without
the human face.
Yeah, with his human face. Like, that's not how people here are going to recognize him.
I will say, going to a convention and be able to buy pictures of other people at that convention.
Very strange.
Probably doesn't happen at most conventions.
No. Very strange.
Unless it's like a modeling convention and they're getting a cut.
And they're getting a cut. No. This, I will say, very... Because the only thing I could think of, the only thing I can compare is when I was at the Star Trek convention and you went and you got a photo op, you had to go and pick your pictures up, but like you didn't buy other people's pictures, you just went and picked up your own pictures.
You ever been on like a cruise line and like put the photos out in the hallway of everyone? Like, if you picked out a picture of like a random person and went there to buy it, I would think they would be like, sir, you can't buy that
photo. Yeah, they'd be like, that's not you. Like,
maybe, and again, me not really knowing, maybe there's some chance that the like at a convention like this, because people are wearing masks all the time, they have no way of knowing
who you are. Yeah. So maybe they think that Grissom is
that this is just raccoon. The normal protocol.
Yeah.
So that people maybe don't have to expose themselves. Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't have to take their wallet out and break character while they're in costume.
Maybe. So we then have Catherine attending a fashion show and she spots a blue cat in a bikini/lingerie set and is like, hey, you need to come with me, because they're trying to find plushies and furries that are blue because of the furball. So they bring all the blue furries together and they're letting them know, we're going to need samples, we need to talk to you with the mask, but the cat refuses. The cat is like, nope, like, if you want to talk to me, this is how you're going to talk to me.
I guess we're lucky that blue's not a more popular color.
Hello, this is racial profiling.
We're going to need samples of your fur.
We're also going to need to talk to you without the masks on.
Do you have a problem with that?
You wouldn't ask a human lady to take her makeup off. If you want to talk to me, this is the me you're going to talk to.
So then we have what I think is a fun scene. Mostly because Jim Brass is just amazing. But Jim Brass is escorting the cat through HQ to the interrogation room. And Jim Brass is being a professional about it, but he definitely has that face when he first walks in where he's just like, I don't know. Like, what do you want me to tell you? Like, this is how they wanted to walk in. I'm just doing my job.
There is a really, I don't think it's intentional, but a really sort of interesting coincidence with the cat has got her hands together in like cat pose.
Yes.
So, but they almost look like they're cuffed.
Yes.
But
they're not. Like they're cuffed.
And I was like, oh, was that intentional?
Yeah.
If it was, it's so good.
Yeah. So they bring the cat to interrogation where Catherine and Grissom are. They, Sexy, which is how they like to be referred to, does finally agree to removing the mask. And this is my first spot.
Yes.
The Gista. This is Willie Garson. He plays Bud Simmons in this episode. And I know him primarily from Sex and the City.
Oh, interesting. I know him primarily as Maz in White Collar.
Oh, okay.
White Collar is a sort of like, not, I guess it's not really a crime drama show. It's more of like a detective.
He's an 81 episode.
He's like a secondary character, but one of the most popular secondary characters in the show. He's in like whole seasons, every episode.
Okay.
Later on in the season, he's sort of the best friend of the main character. But yeah, and it's almost like funny because like this is exactly the same character in a lot of ways.
Oh, is it really?
Like yeah, like you would if that character had this habit, I wouldn't be surprised. And that sort of like he's always like, because they're all scam artists in that show, they're switching from one thing to the next, like, and then he has this like deadpan face, like his sort of like normal non-animal character is very much like the character of the Moz character in White Collar.
Okay. Oh funny.
I was like, holy crap. And it's like, cool.
So first spot the guest star of the episode, and this is where we get some of the lingo. We start to learn some of the verbiage used in the community, which is that he admits that Rocky was scritching him, which is like kind of like a grooming, you know, innocent-ish, light petting sort of thing.
Yeah.
We then have Catherine and Grissom with Bud/Kitty's costumes. They scan it and look at that. There's some biological fluids right underneath that bikini bottom.
A lot of it.
Whoopsie doosies.
Apparently his do they tell you whose it is at any point? I was assuming it's his, but
it's a victim. They do say at one point that it's Rocky Raccoon.
So the inside of his costume isn't latex. Maybe that's why the inside of Rocky Raccoon's is latex.
Yeah,
keep the spillage.
So this does bring up a conversation, like one of a few conversations around sex in this episode. And Catherine's just like, what's wrong with regular sex? And Grissom's like, what is regular sex? And Catherine's like, look, like to each their own. But, and maybe there's so many things.
Catherine strikes me as the character who's probably most likely to have non-regular sex.
100%. I agree entirely. And there's so many lines that I think could be the title of our episode. So I'm going to have to like find out which one like wins when I'm editing. But Catherine's like, you know, kind of like, yeah, all right, cool. Yeah, whatever. To each their own. But she's like, but I'm not going to bop a 6-foot weasel.
Yes.
And I was like, that's so good. But after she makes this statement, Craig Sanders enters and we learn that the trace on Kitty's costume is identical to what was in Rocky Raccoon's vomit, which is the ipecac and civet oil. So they're like, oh, that's how Rocky or Mr. Pitts got that in his system. And then there's another line. This is not going to be the title of the episode.
This is my favorite line.
It's good.
So well done.
So Greg Sanders goes, that's what you get for eating, and then like cuts.
There's like a dry pause before the cut.
Like, do you know what we're saying? Hint,
nudge.
So good. Both times I watched this episode, I was like, so as we've talked about, I am a child half the time. So Sarah and Nick are then with George's pants, and they realize there's like only one drop of blood on the inside of the cuff. So they're like trying to wrap their heads around how this happens, which transitions us to an experiment on blood spatter at different temperatures. So they do it at room temperature. They then lower it to 22 degrees. And then look at that. The blood becomes pellets. Hence, one little pellet of blood landed in George's cuff.
Which Nick picked up all these pellets in sort of that opening scene.
Yeah, so how did we not already know this? But this...
We didn't know all of it was going to be like that.
That's true. This brings us to realizing George, not the shooter. George is telling the truth as far as not being the shooter here. So then Sarah and Nick walk into the lab where Hodges is. And we learn that the flecks taken off of George's shirt are like two layers of paint from a car. So the bottom layer is like the burgundy, like regular coat on this, I think Monte Carlo, I think is what it was.
Yep.
And then for some reason, they painted over the burgundy with blue house paint.
And so probably like, because the paint job wasn't looking great.
Yeah, so they're like, what is going on? But before we follow up on that, we're with Jim Brass and Catherine. They are back with Sexy Kitty. And this is where we learn that it is Pitts, aka Rocky Raccoon's semen, all over Sexy Kitty's costume. So,
which Rocky Raccoon was wearing a latex suit, so he had to take the suit off in order for that to happen.
He needed to at least zip out of the bottom of it. Like, no, step out of the bottom.
His costume was full of blood because it had nowhere to drain.
But that was afterwards. I'm saying during. So we learned.
Yeah. During the pile.
Yeah. So we learned that there's a fur pile. We also learned that there is yiffing, which is a real term. And then we get a few cuts as they're talking about this to a fur pile and yiffing, or what they describe to be as yiffing. So we get like a direct view of what's going on. We then go to kind of like the behind the scenes part of the convention center, and there's a few furries there.
Private party.
Grissom, Catherine, and an officer have a warrant to enter said party. So,
and the password.
And the password. And so they do.
EIO, which E-I-O. I did not get the first time I watched
this. Oh, really?
I was like, why did you? I think she was just being pedantic at first. Like, here's a dumb password. Like,
yeah.
And then I was like, wait, why did I miss that? I was like, it almost excuses the ridiculous, like the demeaning part of it, and just makes it like, yeah, I mean, that's the funniest thing you could have said there.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And so they enter the party. They're telling everyone that they need to take their masks off and they're going to have to produce IDs and that they're going to confiscate the costumes. So Grissom and Catherine are going through said marinated costumes. And then Grissom asks Catherine to sniff the hand of one of the costumes, which belongs to a wolf.
So
and look at that.
No, it's weird. We're about to meet this character.
We are so about to meet this character.
We can pause. But they intentionally had this giant photo of him attached to the costume with his name, character name, John Lee.
Yep.
And I was like, wait, I didn't think it was going to be, I just thought it was a throwaway. And I was like, hey, I know this guy. I know this character. And I was like, I have a spot the guest star on a photograph, not realizing that I should have realized that they did that because we're about to meet this character.
Yes. So we can do the spot the guest star now if you want to, though, because it's also my it's also my spot the guest star.
Yeah, and I will be amazed if you have the same source.
I can almost guarantee we do not.
Yep.
Okay. So this is Patrick Fischler, who plays Mr. Lee or the Wolf, I guess, in this episode.
John Lee is his full character name according to the picture.
Oh, okay, according to the picture, but
it's not in his credit.
It's not in his credit, though.
But that's what's written on the photograph, John Lee.
So this is. Okay, I'm going to count this as a spot the guest star, but it is only a spot the guest star because I knew him from this episode, and then I saw him in an episode of Bones, and I went,
okay,
I know that guy from CSI. So now, like,
it's a boomerang spot the guest
star. It's a boomerang spot the guest star. So he guest starred in one episode of Bones, and that's how I... And then he was also in 8 episodes of Once Upon a Time, and so I'm almost positive I recognize him from that too.
I watched a lot of Once Upon a Time, and I saw that, and I was like, yeah, I don't really remember him from that show at all.
Now I gotta Google that character, because it's like...
It's later in the show, and I wonder if maybe I didn't watch that season.
Okay.
But I know him as Elliot Stemple in the hit, also USA, hit USA show, because White Collar is a USA show, Suits, where he plays a character called Elliot Stemple, who is only in a couple of episodes of Suits.
Okay.
But he is like talked about in a few more, but I really remember him because for some reason I've gotten into a loop of short form video clips of Suits.
Okay.
And there's a lot from the episodes that he's in, him and the main character in that show argue or trade blows back and forth. And a couple of them, and it's like, so like I even knew his Suits character's name when I saw his face.
Yeah,
I was like, that's like... Elliot Stemple from Suits. And then I went to look it up. I was like, he's only in 2 episodes. I thought he was gonna be in like a whole season. I thought he was gonna be the bad guy for like a whole season. He's like a 2 little episode thing.
You're like, nope, just kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. But yeah, I was like, I definitely knew he was. But he looks just like he does in this episode. They aren't that far apart. And I thought, like, I was almost like, he must be in a bunch of other things. And I was like, I mean, he's in stuff, but
he's
like,
definitely in things, yeah.
Nothing to write home about.
I did
message you that I had a fake spot the guest star where I thought somebody was someone else.
But it was Rocky Raccoon, wasn't it?
No, it's Linda Lamb, who I forget I can probably look it up really quickly.
I think I'm almost positive that the person who plays Mr. Pitts in this episode was in an earlier episode of CSI. Hold on, let me go see if I can.
Oh, yeah. So I messaged Raven and was like, this character, I thought it was this person. It's not that person. It was not the person I thought it was. And that, however, the person I thought it was in an earlier episode, as I was saying. So not the actress in this episode, but the actress I thought it was has actually already guest starred.
Gotcha.
In an episode.
Okay, but I want to double check. I'm fairly certain that Rocky Raccoon / Mr. Pitts was in an earlier episode. No, he's only in one. Huh. I definitely thought that he played another character, but it's just saying one episode of CSI. All right, I guess I'm wrong.
So this actress is in season 1, episode 22, Evaluation Day.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And I don't even know if I remember now, but there's these two random girls that they pick up and they're like in the crime. It's funny because I can see the photograph of it. It's from, I think, the B plot or whatever.
I know which one you're talking about. Yes.
The main plot is a young kid.
Yep.
Who was driving his dad's car.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Or his grandfather's car or something.
Grandfather's.
Yeah. Those girls. And yeah, the actress she's in that. They do look a little bit alike.
Okay.
But you see so little of Linda Lamb.
Yeah.
I call her Linda Lamb. We don't, you know, we'll technically know that, but yeah.
We'll find out in a scene from now.
Yeah. We see so little of her that, and it's dark or whatever. And they do look a little bit alike. I mean, not a lot that much alike. A little bit like, and I was like, but I thought it was funny that I thought it was this person. I looked it up. Okay, it wasn't. And then I was like, what's that actor's name? And I went to look them up. And the picture from that episode of CSI is like the first thing on their IMDb page. Okay. And I was like, oh yeah, right. They were already in an episode of CSI, which would, by the way, disqualify them for Spot the Guest Star.
It would. We only count them the first time. So we have Grissom talking to Mr. Lee, and he admits to mixing and rubbing on Sexy Kitty the ipecac and civet oil because he just knew that Rocky Raccoon wouldn't be able to keep his paws off of him, and that rascally raccoon stole his girlfriend at last year's convention, and he still has very fond feelings for his ex-girlfriend because Linda introduced him to like being a furry.
To her lifestyle.
Yeah, and we learn that Linda Lamb is in fact Linda Jones. So Grissom and Catherine return to Linda Jones's squash car, open up the trunk, and there's a lamb costume. And they're like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Linda Jones is Linda Lamb.
It's been here the whole time. You know how thorough they are some of the times?
Well, like, they did like give themselves a bit of an out where they were like, there was no context to open the trunk in this case.
Yeah, but
like, They held on to it. So Grissom is then mapping the route, like from the convention center to like where they live, and they're trying to figure this out. Catherine has to explain to him like how car fights work.
You can definitely tell, and you can imagine with Eddie.
Been in some car fights.
Not only have they been in car fights, but also where maybe drinking was involved, where womanizing might be involved. You know, they didn't paint Eddie as the
best character.
When they kept him around.
Rest in peace, but not really, Eddie. So we then.
I will say I have a prediction that I made at this point.
Oh yeah, let's hear it.
That turns out to be completely wrong in the next scene, which is best predictions.
Okay, what's your
Which is like I thought it was going to be one of those weird things where they just let us along, and they were like, "Oh, yep, she." She was driving along the road, or a truck was driving along the road and like kicked a rock up, and it wasn't really a bullet. There was just a rock.
Yeah.
And the rock went through and killed because he was on the side of the road.
Yep.
And then
Nope. We'll find out. Yeah. We'll find out a little bit that's not what happened. Before that though, Nick approaches Sarah, lets her know that there's no luck on finding the car that is painted two different colors, but he did get a lead on the adhesive, and it is granite glue. So they're going to do some cross-referencing, see if they can narrow their search to find their guy.
I like how Nick pretends like he knew this all along. Should that mean something to me? And it's like the most obscure piece of information.
Yeah, like, I don't know what that says.
Nick, you don't have a background in construction working.
As far as we know. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe he did it as like a summer job when he was younger.
Watches a lot of How It's Made.
Hey, who knows? To each their own. So we're back with Grissom and Catherine. They're with the valet, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember this couple. Dude was hammered. Girlfriend, wife was really
and
upset.
In a fox suit.
Yeah, like in a giant raccoon suit. Kind of hard to forget. And so they're kind of standing there and they're like talking through how the fight would have worked out, right? Like she pulls over, she lets him out. She then like realizes like, oh, I got to go back and get him, and like turns around and ends up like hitting him. And they're realizing like she probably didn't shoot him. So like who shot him? And yeah. So before we learn that though, Vega is with a suspect and Nick and Sarah are in the room as well. And they're like, hey, here's your gun, missing part of the stock. And oh, here's your car, which is a Monte Carlo, which is two different colors. Like they're just like, bam, bam. And he's like,
dead
hey.
To rights.
Yeah. And he's right? like, I want a lawyer, which
smartest criminal they've ever had on the show.
Yeah. I was like, all right.
Dumbest criminal they've ever had on the show.
And so before we wrap up with him though, we see Catherine and a few others with metal detectors on scene. They're trying to, you know, locate the bullet because they're trying to find out who shot Mr. Pitt. So Catherine finds the bullet and they're realizing two things. He probably was on all fours when he was shot, and he was shot from a steep trajectory. So then Grissom starts pondering and he's like, maybe we're going about this the wrong way. We've been trying to find a person who shot a person. Maybe we need to find a person who shot an animal.
Yeah. Like, I mean, at this point, I was thinking like hunting or
yeah.
something like that. They do show like a truck drive by up yeah. on, there's like a access road that runs, that's up in an elevated position with like a fence. And you can imagine yeah. that there could have been somebody up there.
Yep, for sure. So then we have, this is another one where it's like, I mean, it wasn't as bad because they didn't like literally walk George up to him, but George
yeah.
walks into, but even still, like George is a witness. You shouldn't be letting George just like walk into who you think committed the crime. Like those two shouldn't meet, but they do. And so George sees Virgil and we learn that Virgil is his cousin and that poor George was just talking to Virgil at bowling night and was like telling him about the vending machines and about Petey's run to In-N-Out. And George is just really bummed out that someone that he like knew and trusted would do this to him. And he wants to know why. And Nick and Sarah are like, I don't yeah. know.
The idea being like Virgil didn't want to kill his cousin, which is why he right. knocked him out.
Yeah.
Versus killing him when he killed the other guy. He threw him in his car, drove him around for a while, ditched him. It was his neighborhood that he was in.
Yeah.
He wasn't home because he had just, you know, committed robbed a convenience from... store. Yeah, yeah. He was trying to stay out of the way, which like ties it all together. It was a really good, like, kind of like, oh, yeah. That's you laid down all of those tracks. Good job.
Yeah. I think so. And so that's the end of storyline B, but we have a little bit left in storyline A. Grissom and Catherine go talk to, they're at a kennel. They're talking to the owner and he's just like, he's cash. Like he's not worried about anything. And he's saying like, oh yeah. Like I was eating dinner and then watching Jeopardy, but then the dogs were stirred up. And then I went out and I saw a coyote and I took care of it. And I was able to come in and finish Jeopardy. Then we wrap the episode up with a Jim Brass Grissom and Catherine debrief on the case where they essentially just walk through the entire case and that they're not going to press charges on the kennel owner because he shot yeah. what he legitimately thought was a coyote. There was
no one is ever going to convict that guy.
No one's going to convict him. And it just was basically a domestic dispute that turned into a tragedy.
Yep. Yeah. And he could have just easily been killed by a truck or by another random thing on the side of the road, and just maybe put high vis tape on your suit if you're going to be ditched on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Won't be mistaken so much as a.
Yeah. Or even better, before you get into the car, take the suit off, especially if you feel nauseous.
Yeah.
Because the idea of like puking throwing through up your suit, like I don't
throw. I was like, or better, just don't cheat on your spouse.
I mean, yes. Yeah, don't.
Then their exes won't poison you.
Yeah, don't get into fur piles when you're supposed to be in. Like, to be fair, we never hear this one way or the other, but we assume to be a monogamous relationship between Rocky Raccoon and Linda Lamb.
Yep.
And he is out there Yiffin with countless other people in a fur pile.
Even Linda's own words and reenactment reinforce that idea.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
She does not like the idea that he's partaking in fur piles.
Yeah. Yeah. So good point. That is very true. And that is the end of our episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I wasn't sure, I think, how I felt the first time, and I really came around to the episode.
Okay.
I think I am almost shocked. Even like reviewing this episode has been fun. There were a lot of things I caught on the rewatch that I was like, oh yeah, okay. They've done a good job there. It's been a while since I think I felt that way. And that's one of the things I like when they do it well. So I had to give it some bonus points for there. I actually decided during this recording to pull it up by a half a point.
Ooh, okay. All right.
And put it at 3.5 because I'm going to give it a rewatch.
All right.
Because I enjoyed rewatching it. And what else can I go off of than what I enjoy?
That's fair.
Also, I stumbled on the weirdest fact. We missed a spot, the guest star of epic proportions.
Oh, no. Who did we miss?
Kevin from The Office, a.k.a. Brian Botgartner, plays Dogman, a background extra in a dog suit. And I will Google you this Reddit from the CSI Reddit where someone has screen grabbed. It is not a high quality picture. You could not tell me that was him.
Let me open this up.
So but apparently it is. And
we'll share this on our
social. He shows up as uncredited because I was checking to see if Anthony Zeiger's son was like in the extended cast and crew credits.
Yeah, but I would never have. That's what I would never.
But yeah, that's Kevin from The Office. Dogman, uncredited. Virgil is also uncredited in this episode, which is crazy because he has speaking parts, several of them, and he's a main character.
He's not credited in this episode?
Well, he's in IMDb as under uncredited.
That's bananas.
Yeah, as is apparently Eric Stone Street, who I don't think is in the episode. And we haven't seen an episode in a long time, so maybe I can't always trust IMDb.
Yeah, because he definitely had a speaking. Yeah, he is uncredited. I also feel like, is he a Spot the Guest Star for me? A Miss Spot the Guest Star?
Hold on a Eric second. Stone Street?
Robert Baker.
Oh.
Plays Virgil.
Well, he could be a Miss Spot the Guest Star.
That's what I'm saying. I said, is it? Oh.
He's in some stuff.
He is.
I don't really recognize him from anything.
He's in 3 episodes of The Originals.
Yeah.
So I
don't recognize him from that.
I probably know him from that. Oh, he's in 13 episodes of Grey's Anatomy.
I thought you might know him from that.
Yeah, I probably know him from that.
I looked at his thing and I was like, yeah, I don't know this guy. he looks like a guy you might know. Like but I was like, no, I don't know this guy. So I had to put him down. Okay. He's in a couple of movies, too.
A couple of things. So maybe it's a bit misspot the guest star there. But okay, so 3.5.
Well, if you know this character, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Maybe we'll definitely share the Brian one on our socials. So for me, I'm going to give this episode a 4 out of 5.
Oh, really?
I am.
Oh, good.
Hear me out.
I'm excited.
Hear me out.
So, you don't have to defend yourself.
I do. I
believe you.
I do have to defend
myself. I almost was like, would I call this a 4? And then I was like, no. But so, I easily could have.
Do I think that in a... It's the best way to say this. Do I think this is like a theatrical masterpiece? No.
No?
I don't.
Oh.
Do I think that it... I feel like this episode is a good indicator that the show has started to find itself.
Okay.
So Grissom is, this is like the Grissom that I more fondly remember. The excited scientist to explore all facets of life Grissom. Like the non-judgmental.
Yeah.
I really just want to like learn about the world Grissom. And so that was like refreshing to be like, oh yeah, like this is the Grissom that I really enjoy. And I love the back and forth between Catherine and Grissom this whole episode, that they're like buddy buddy and they can like have these conversations and bounce off of one another. Warwick definitely needed more than like one scene, so that definitely minused some. But I do you know, and part of it is nostalgia. Part of it is, you know, when I first watched this, I was a junior in high school. Yeah, I graduated in 04. So I was like a junior or senior in high school when I watched this for the first time. And this is definitely not to yuck anybody's yum. Furries are not my thing. But I do remember fondly, like, looking back and realizing that, like, CSI made subcultures not so others. Like, there was, like, a legitimate, like, not that they did a perfect job of it. Like, they definitely, like, made some jokey jokes where maybe jokey jokes shouldn't have been made. But overall, they treated the topic fairly respectfully.
Yeah, it's hard
especially with the time. Like, I'm not, you know, now, obviously, it could be done a lot better. But, like, at the time, I feel like this was, like, given a pretty decent treatment, all things considered.
It's hard not to apply the standards of my time of now, you know, as a first time viewer. And I do think that there are times that I was like kind of put off by parts of like the way they would, like, I just don't take kindly like to the almost like making fun of other people's fun that took place.
Yeah.
Which is why I was sort of like, oh, when you told me that Anthony Zeiger, like, he has a relationship, because it means that they truly meant well. I think they just didn't have the tool.
Yeah, and maybe I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt. But I will say, like, when I watched this the first time, I did not interpret it as, let's just, I was going to say, like, a bad word, but we generally don't put, like, parental warnings on our. But I saw it as, like, yes, there was definitely some poking fun, but not in a malicious way.
No.
Like, I was still trying to humanize the characters and just have this be a subset of like who they are.
They always have the characters kind of keep each other in check.
Yeah.
I do think the script, like the jokes in this episode, might be the best jokes they've written in any episode.
They're so good. That's what I just feel like I was like legitimately like several times during this episode.
Very disappointed the first time I watched this episode that Lady Heather was not in it.
Oh, I know.
I thought it was a really good opportunity to have another Lady Heather.
She'll be back.
Doesn't matter.
Guys, put pressure on Lady Heather to check her Instagram messages and get back to us.
Maybe you got to check Blue Sky, see if she's made the migration.
I mean, Georgia Fox follows us on Blue Sky and has liked a few of our posts. So just saying. I texted Nick very excitedly one night and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, today's been a roller coaster where I was like, originally I think I watched this episode 3 or 4 days ago. I remember thinking like, episode wasn't that good. And then I've rewatched it and I was like, I was laughing again. Yeah. And I was like, I would watch this episode again. I was like, this episode is fine. And I was like, that's why I was like, I feel like maybe I was tired or sick.
Yeah.
A little run down and I was just not appreciating it. And I was reviewing, I was like, how am I going to review this? This episode needs another half a point. And I was like, maybe in a different world. Like, that's why when you get a 4, I was very excited because part of me was like, can I give this? As we were talking, I was like, I gave it a half a point. I was like, should I give it a whole point? And I was like, no, I'll just give it a half a point. Like, I still got to remember that, you know, and try to like keep all the interactions to get in one big picture.
Yeah.
And again, there were things that I didn't like with the episode. Like, work isn't really in it.
Yeah.
I was like, I really wanted like Lady Heather to show up. Fair. Especially with the tension that's developed between Grissom and Sarah.
Yeah.
Like, what a great time that would have been. And maybe they wanted to, and they reached out and she wasn't available. She was working on something else. Yeah, who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was like, it just makes you realize like, oh, that could have been better. The B plot, it might be one of my favorite B plots we've ever had.
Oh, really?
Every top three. Yeah, I loved everything about that plot. The way it resolved. It's the perfect B plot because it doesn't have to be serious.
Right.
It's very, and the characters are just like figuring it out, going through the motions.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing real testing and science.
Yeah,
and
we get a lot of lab help, like Hodges. Yep.
The lab workers are really stepping it up.
Hodges had a great line, which I didn't mention, but at one point he's talking to Nick and Sarah and he's like, I'm done trying to figure people out.
Oh yeah, I'm done trying to understand people.
Yeah. And Sarah goes, oh, that's a good idea. And he's like, yeah, I know. And then he just said, like, walks away.
Oh, that's really smart of you. And he goes, I know.
He goes, I know. And then just like,
again, that's a great line.
I was like, oh, Hodges. I was like,
the episode is really funny. And
You're
like, this is like the funniest place. I was like, I hope so. Cause like, there's a lot of things that went really, really well in this episode. And
if this is the first
episode of CSI I've ever watched, I would be like, let's watch another episode.
Yeah, this is like, I didn't want to like say it at the end of the last episode that we recorded because I don't want to spoil things for you. So I generally,
it's good enough to color too, because sometimes I think part of me was like, I was like, I really hope Raven doesn't think that I'm out of line giving this 3.5 points, but I think I kind of really like this episode.
No, because I was so excited when I realized that this was the episode that we were reviewing. Like, yeah. I was like, yes. I was like, it's this episode. I love this episode. And then I was like, I can't say any of this because I don't want to color Nick's opinion in any way.
It's definitely so rewatchable.
Like, so I was like, too. I just have to like keep my mouth shut. But yeah, I love this episode.
The power of the rewatch.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about the fact that you've seen this episode 3 or 4 times before we started recording this and then you're watching it 2 more times, I think it's really important to like keep in mind. Yeah. For like a show you want to watch over and over again, like people binge all these different shows so often, and so yeah, I think that this show, it's like immediately I like when I'm rewatching, I was like, yeah, I could watch this episode. Yeah. It's funny. It's good.
It's good.
It's easy to digest. It's not heavy. You know, I could watch the show a million times.
So
I did recommend CSI to friends of mine who were looking for a new show to watch. I said you could watch it, and then you can listen to our podcast. We'll see if that happens.
We'll see if that happens.
If you get to this episode, message me. You know who you are.
You know who you are. I don't know who you are, but Nick knows who you are. So we'll see how we feel about next week's episode when we return to review season 4, episode 6, Jackpot. So otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.